Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Dominican University of California's Borowski School of Business, and this is a long title, and it's Institute for Leadership Studies, which is your host today, along with the North Bay Leadership Council. Our Business Edge Breakfast briefing seeks to ignite and innovate strategic initiatives and transform business. And we have the wonderful opportunity today to have one of our precious alumni as our speaker, Vicki Suter. Should we welcome her?
Yes.
And before I ask Cynthia Murray, who is the CEO of the North Bay Leadership Council, to introduce Vicki and to moderate our program today, I just would like to thank some of our partners. And isn't there's no better bank in the world than who? Bank of Marin. And I mean it seriously. You are a community bank, and you've brought us together so often, not only here at our breakfast program, but at our leadership lecture series. And thank you so very much for bringing community to our university. Thank you so much. Our other partners, crucially important to our program, are the Small Business Development Center of the SBA. And Matthew Wick, would you please stand? Let's welcome Matthew. And I was telling Matthew, I just love the SBDC's logo, helping small businesses do big business. Very nice. And so after our program, please visit with Matthew. He has his table there, and he can talk with you about the opportunities if you want to start or grow your business. The SBDC is a member of our Borowski School of Business. Their offices are right here in our business school. Thank you, Matthew, for being here today. Also, a vital partner to the Business Edge is the San Rafael Chamber of Commerce. And we are so fortunate to have both the CEO today, Joanne Webster. Thank you, Joanne. And Leonard Weingarten. Leonard, would you please stand? Thank you, Leonard. Also, Leonard, you'll be available to network and support others at the end of the program.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Leonard. The U.S. Commercial Service of the U.S. Department of Commerce is also a member of our business school. They are not here this morning, but I want to represent that they offer support to businesses to export. And it is a thrilling opportunity to have them on our campus for the last 15 years. So thank you for supporting our partnership, U.S. Commercial Service of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Also, Marin Economic Forum. I don't think Mike is here today. Yes? But we really appreciate the Marin Economic Forum for being our partner. So the Business Edge Breakfast Briefing is a vital program for our business school and for our community. As you can see, we have 25 business students in the room this morning. And I know they wanted to get up this early. Thank you so much, all of my business colleagues, for doing it. But we really welcome you, students, and hopefully you'll learn so very much. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Cynthia Murray. Cynthia Murray is the CEO and president of the North Bay Leadership Council. She serves on the boards of many organizations, including the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, First Five Sonoma County Commission, the Sonoma County Health Action Council, the Marin School to Careers Partnership, and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's Policy Advisory Council. She received the 2010 Women in Business Award from the North Bay Business Journal for her achievements in economic development. And prior to becoming CEO at the North Bay Leadership Council, she served 8 years on the Marin County Board of Supervisors and 7 years on the Novato City Council, including one mayor as term. Cynthia is a graduate of Rutgers University and spent 20 years in sales and marketing and is an adjunct professor at Sonoma University, as well as has been a Dominican University professor. Please welcome Cynthia Murray.
Thank you, Denise. Good morning. It is fabulous to see so many of you here. And to echo Denise, I know it's not easy for the students to get up this early. We really appreciate you making the effort to learn from a graduate of Dominican who has a fabulous message. Her talk today is, do your business conversations get the results you want? How many times do we have conversations that get the results we want? So we're going to get some exciting tips that we can use in business, and I bet in our personal lives too. It's my great pleasure to introduce Vicky Suter. She is the president and CEO of Suter Business Builders. She's an international speaker, business consultant, and coach, and has been showing small businesses how to thrive, not just survive, for more than 25 years. Vicky's motto, success, comes from knowing how to keep your finger on the pulse of the most critical numbers and elements that drive your success and profitability, and then manage them relentlessly. I love that, relentlessly. She believes that when you commit to being clear, you've discovered the real secret to securing a successful future. Vicky helps people gain that clarity so they can see their businesses differently, and then gives them the tools to do things differently. Vicky has, since the beginning of her business, helped hundreds of small businesses achieve the kind of success they never dreamed possible. She's the author of the book, The Profit Bleed, How Managing Margin Can Save Your Contracting Business, which is currently available on Amazon and will be at the registration desk after the program's over. So today, Vicky's here to talk to us about conversations that get results. Please welcome Vicky Suter.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, and thank you, Denise, and thank you all for being here. I'm super excited to be here, as Denise said, that I am an alumni of Dominican University. I actually was in the cohort from 95 to 97 in what was at that time called the Pathways Program, and you'll hear actually a little bit more about that. It was instrumental in terms of my growth and development, so I'm super excited also to see a lot of students here today. So this conversation that we're going to talk about is, how do you have conversations with people that produce results? And maybe some of you can relate to this experience. Have you ever found that it's difficult sometimes to get people to follow through on what they say they're going to do? Has anyone ever had that experience? Like somebody says they're going to do something and then they don't do it, right? Or that it's challenging sometimes to get people to take ownership. So have you ever had the experience, for those of you who have employees or people on your team, or even people who are partners with you and coworkers in your business, or even maybe other people on learning teams with you in school, where you find that it's tough to get people to like kind of step up to the bat or to really own a bigger piece of their part of it? Has anyone ever had that experience? Yeah, it's super frustrating, yeah? Because you would like people to own it, like to take it on, like to have that kind of passion and that vigor about it. And we're going to talk today about like what are some of the reasons why people don't. And what was the last one I had there? Yeah, so people don't follow through. That's the other one, right? So have you ever had the experience where you ask somebody to do something, or they've said that they're going to do something and then they don't do it? And then like super frustrating also, right? And what I notice is that it ends up having us feel like we're firefighters. It ends up having us feel like we're having to chase after stuff a lot of times at the end, or having to chase after people, or be in like constant babysitting and micromanagement mode. Has anyone ever had that experience, like where you have to feel like you're micromanaging somebody to get stuff done? And it tends to be sort of time consuming, right? You end up spending a lot more time doing things than we would like, because we just want to get stuff done. And it was interesting, I did a survey not very long ago, and I asked people about leadership and about where their challenges were in leadership and as managers, and 75% of the managers said that they wished that people would take more ownership. So if that's an experience that you're having, just know that you're not alone. It's a very common experience that a lot of managers face and a lot of managers struggle with. And part of it is that we don't necessarily get taught leadership or how to effectively manage and empower people when we learn to be managers. So a lot of us, and I know this was certainly true for me, that I learned how to be a manager and a leader based on how people were with me as managers and leaders. And it was a little bit more oriented towards the carrot and the stick approach, which was, if you do this, then that. And some of you may actually remember growing up in a household that was kind of like that too, right? If you do this, then you get that. And so when we go into leadership roles, we end up doing what's been modeled for us, and we don't really oftentimes get taught the whole thing of how do we empower people to take more ownership. And so that's also part of what we're going to talk about today. And then when I did the survey also, what I heard is from people was that 45% of the people just wish they were better at managing people, right? Like, we don't like having to be firefighters or micromanagers. It's super frustrating, and we just as soon not do it, and we wish we were better at it. But, you know, regrettably, we oftentimes just struggle through it. So would you like to know how to have that, how to have a different experience? How many of you experienced that and would like to have a different experience around it? Okay, cool, great, good. And would like to know how to have people create more consistent results, take more ownership, right? Do better follow through, be more consistent. That would be great, wouldn't it? So I want to just share a story with you about my experience as a manager, because my early years in managing people was not fun. Matter of fact, it was a super painful experience. I was working in a corporate environment where I had a number of employees on my team, and I found that I spent a lot of time babysitting people. I found that I spent a lot of time micromanaging people, having to chase after people to produce results and to get stuff done. And we'd have these big deadlines, and we'd be working these crazy number of hours, and I'd be like, you know, did you get it done? And did you get it done? And what I was basically doing is I got really good at micromanaging people. I was working an average of 50 to 60 hours a week. I was completely exhausted, and my life was suffering as a result of it. And it was around that time that I went, you know what? I'm going to go start my own business, because that's much easier. It's kind of the upside and the downside, right? I'm going to go, and I don't have to worry about employees anymore. So I did. I was super relieved. 1990, I went and hung my shingle. I started my own business, and I was like, all right, the only person I have to depend on is me. I don't have to depend on all those pesky little employees because they're just not reliable. About 4 years in, I found myself back to working 50 to 60 hours a week. I was at that point a mom of a young child. And this is part of the story that I don't actually share with many people. At that point, I also decided that I was going to go back to college. I was going to come to Dominican University and do their cohort, their Pathways program, and complete my degree. Because that was a big deal for me at the point in my life. I was felt very incomplete that I didn't have my degree completed. And I thought, I really want to do this. And I really want to figure out how I can go back to school. I'm already working these crazy number of hours. And I realized that I had to look at hiring somebody to work for me. And I was scared because I was like, I don't feel very skilled at this. And I don't like having people work for me, and I don't want to become a babysitter again, and I don't want to be micromanaged people. And it just, like, it didn't feel very good. And I was nervous. I was nervous that I wasn't going to be able to have it turn out. But I thought, you know what? I got to try. And I've really got to give it the best chance that I can. And so I went, all right, now how am I going to get somebody to come and work for me to do what I do? Because here was the other problem. I learned what I knew in what I was doing in my business at that point through the School of Hard Knocks. In other words, I'd made a ton of mistakes. I learned while I was on the job. Like, I didn't have formal training to do what I do. I didn't have somebody who taught me. I learned as I learned. That's how I got to know what I knew to do. And I was like, I don't even know how to get somebody to do what I do. But I went, you know what? You got to do it, because if this is important to you, and quite frankly, it really was taking its toll on my personal life at that point as well. So I made this whole list of all these things that I wanted somebody to do, all these tasks. I went, like, what do I do? What are all these tasks I can have somebody else do? And then I looked at, well, what are the skills and qualifications somebody would need to do that job? Like, you know, where, what kind of work have they done? What's the experience they have? So on. And so I started interviewing people, and I met Beth. And Beth, I just, like, we hit it off right off the bat. I really liked her. We actually were born and raised in the same hometown in Buffalo, New York. And I was like, it's going to be perfect. This is going to be different than it's ever been before. So I spent the first couple of months, like, orienting her, introducing her to clients, talking about all the things she needed to do, like sitting down and going through and showing her and this and that. And then I sent her off. I was like, okay, I think I've mastered this. I got this, you know, I figured it out. And so then a couple weeks in, I got my first phone call from a client who said, you know, when you're here, you ask us a lot of questions. Beth's not asking us any questions. And then a couple days later, it was a call from another client who said, hey, you know, we asked Beth how to do this and this and this. She told us we did it. Totally was not right. And now we're spending, like, all kinds of time trying to fix it. And those kind of phone calls continued. And I was so disheartened, because I was like, man, here we go again. And so I doubled down and I went, okay, I'm just going to spend more time with her, and I'm going to nail it this time. I'm going to teach her everything that she needs to ask. I'm going to spend more time giving her all the questions she needs to do and making sure she's doing all the right tasks. And then, oh, and by the way, I'm going to spend more time reviewing her work to make sure that I know that she's doing it well and that she's, you know, she's not making those mistakes with clients. Well, before I knew it, I had Beth working for me full time, and I was working 50 to 60 hours a week, and I was no further ahead than I was before. And it was around that time that I was reading a book by Stephen Covey called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Anybody in here ever read that book? Yeah, one of my all-time favorite books. And as I was reading the book, I went, oh, okay, I get it. The problem is me. The problem is, I do not know how to be a good manager and a good leader. And, you know, I had to really recognize at that point also that, you know, I have this thing of, if we keep having the same problem over and over again with different people, then you got to look what the common denominator is. Well, I think that was sort of the 2x4 that around that time sort of hit me in the side of the head. And I went, okay, I have a choice here. My choice is, I either give up on this whole thing of managing people and go back to working on my own and forget about going back to college and completing my degree, or I figure this out. And I really, and then I keep my business really small. Well, none of those things were options that I wanted to take. And I'm like, I gotta take this on, and I have to learn to be a better manager and a leader. And it began me on a path of learning from some of the great thought leaders and trainers and teachers on the subject of management and leadership. And it was out of that training and out of that path that I took of learning that I learned what the key was to really getting people to take more ownership. And I learned what the key was to having people follow through and take more responsibility and keep their agreements. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some of those things that I learned, some of the things that I implemented with Beth, things that I have implemented with clients over the last 25 years that has completely transformed their ability and my ability to grow a successful business and to become a leader who loves managing people and loves empowering people. Because that's really our job as managers and leaders, is not to know how to manipulate and control results. But our job as managers and leaders, as we're going to talk about, is really how do we empower people to find and hold and see their best selves. I will just tell you that over the what I'm going to share with you and what I implemented resulted in, Beth worked for me for over 10 years. She was a great employee, great asset to my team. I went from working 50 to 60 hours a week to, while I was in the Pathways program, working an average of 35 hours a week for the next 2.5 years. And in that time, I made twice as much money over that those next 2 years than I had in any of the prior 4 years. So the opportunity that's here for you, if you can see, find the nuggets and find the pieces in yourself, is that this sort of fundamental basis of what we're going to talk about is the pathway for you to find more time and to ultimately find more profit and find more joy in what you do again. Because life got a whole lot. I mean, let's face it, I was in the Pathways program for 2.5 years. I had absolutely no life because my life was completely consumed by, I was a mom first of a young child. In the middle of all that, I became a single mom. I was doing school nights and weekends, and I was running a business. So everybody in my life knew that was it. Like, that was all I was doing for 2.5 years. But it was an extraordinary experience, and it was a great opportunity for me to step out of like how I'd always done it, to have to figure out another way to do it. So let's start with, what are some of the elements and some of the things that I learned that was a problem with me in how I had been approaching what I'd been doing as a manager and leader? My focus had been all about how do you do different tasks in a job. Now, this was my first fundamental problem, and this is one of the things that causes people to end up being helpers more than being people who take ownership and responsibility. It's a thing that causes people to not follow through and not produce the kind of consistent results that we're looking for. So the problem that I had is I had not clearly defined with Beth what I refer to as position agreement. So how many of you have ever heard of a job description? A lot of you, right? How many of you actually have a job description? I know all you people who work at Bank of Marin do, right? My first career, by the way, was in banking. I worked for a bank for 7 years in the lending department. So the distinction I make between a position agreement and a job description is that a job description tends to be focused oftentimes, and this is one of the first questions I often ask clients when I first work with them, is tell me about, do you have position agreements for your team? And probably about a third of the time people go, oh yeah. And then I go look at them and they look just like what I had for Beth, which was basically a task list. It was a list of, here's all the tasks that you need to do, as opposed to, here are the results that you need to produce. Now, I said to somebody that I'm a hand talker, and I'm Italian, and it's really hard to have a mic in one hand, a clicker in the other, and then to do this. So I'm gonna have to be a one-handed talker, but I'm not used to that. So here's the distinction, is that when you look to manage people and empower people to take ownership based on a result, it's completely different than it is if you're asking them to manage tasks. So tasks, if you will, are the activities that generate a result. But if you're actually saying to somebody, well, this is the result that you want to produce, and this is the end game, then here's maybe all of the tasks that need to happen, or the process or procedure that you need to follow in order to produce that result. But if you start to shift your communication with people so that what you're doing is asking them to own a result, there's a lot of amazing things that actually happen. So one of the things that happens is that people have an opportunity to actually have a greater sense of purpose in what they're doing. So one thing that's really important for us to know is that what fundamentally drives us as human beings is to have a sense of belonging and a sense of mattering and ability to feel like what we do matters and that we're making a contribution. And I don't care if you're the janitor or you're the president of a company. All of those, wherever you are, that's fundamentally what drives us as human beings. And so when we can, first of all, see that and understand that about the people that we work, who work for us, who we work for, who work with us, beside us, the people on our teams, even when we're in college, that fundamentally that drives us. And that what demotivates us and what tends to make us not take ownership and not take responsibility and not follow through is that if what the greatest thing that we're held up to is to do task, it's just not very fun, right? I mean, how many of you can recognize this in yourself, like recognize for yourself that there's this greater sense of joy and freedom and fun when we have the ability to know that we've made some difference or made some contribution? How many of you could say that about yourself? Yeah. Yeah. And it's not any different for the people who work for us. Like, we think that, the joy comes from when you've done all the work and you get to the result. But if you don't give them the result to start with, that can be a problem, because then you're just kind of in the minutia. I shared with somebody a little bit earlier, there is a TED talk by a guy. How many people know who Dan Pink is? So a couple of you. He's a great thought leader on the topic of management and leadership. And what's kind of cool is he's also a researcher. And the basis of his work is really based on a lot of research and scientific study that he's done about how human beings work and what motivates us. So Dan Pink has a TED talk called Motivation that I highly recommend, please not while I'm talking, but maybe later. I recommend that you listen to. It is a great TED talk. And he talks about how when we went into the Industrial Revolution and we started having machines that did the things that manually people used to do, that it shifted where our focus of meaning and purpose came from and where our sense of accomplishment came from. And it's really a great piece that I encourage you to listen to, because he speaks very clearly and eloquently about why it's different in how we manage people today than we did, 50, 100 years ago. Let's see where I am on my slides. So the thing about having position agreements, and again, I'm going to call them position agreements. I started to make that distinction. So a job description tends to be focused on task. And what I say is a position agreement is really focused on what's the result you want somebody to produce. So what's the end game that is the criteria for how do you win the game together? And I call it a position agreement because how I look at them is that it's not something that is something I've told you to do or that is my criteria, but that is an opportunity for us to have an agreement about what's winning the game together. And a well-written position agreement allows somebody to be empowered to know how to be successful with you, and it allows them to know how they can personally self-manage and self-understand what winning the game is. How many of you have ever played Monopoly? All right. So when we first learned how to play Monopoly, at least when I first learned how to play Monopoly, what I learned was you how to move around the board, basically, right? You collect, you go by go, you collect $200, you get a little shoe, you move the number of spaces when you roll the dice, you stop on chance, you pick up a chance card, right? You, somebody teaches you like the mechanics, and oh, by the way, whoever has the most amount of money at the end of the game, well, wins the game, that's the end of the game. Now, I grew up in a household with three older brothers, and I lost a lot of Monopoly games, And it wasn't until, I think it was my older brother, Harry, that one day finally took pity on me and he said, well, let me explain to you this strategy for winning the game. He said, the strategy for winning the game is buy all four railroads because you're going to get like four times as much rent when somebody stops there. And oh, by the way, buy a Park Place and Boardwalk because the likelihood of people stopping there means that you're going to collect more rent and the rent's higher there and like that, right? So what he then taught me was the strategy for winning Monopoly as opposed to just how to move around the board and how the mechanics of the game works. That's the distinction. By the way, I finally won my first Monopoly game then. Yay! That's the distinction of a job description that's based on task, which is what I had done with Beth, versus a position agreement that's based on results. So a position agreement, well written, has the opportunity to give people the strategy for how to win the game with you. So let's talk about what are some of the elements of a position agreement that makes for a great position agreement. So first of all, that it is specific and that it speaks to results. So when I talk about results, I mean that it can be measured. How many of you have ever heard of the expression, I'm going to talk about this a bit today, SMART goals? So a few of you, yeah. So SMART goals are that they are specific, that they're measurable, that there's accountability, realistic, and they're time-driven. So specific, measurable, there's accountability, realistic, and time-driven. So one of the things I like about that acronym is that when I think about writing position agreements, instead of it's a task of, well, I'll give you an example for Beth. Instead of having a task on there that said, hey, you need to review somebody's books and make sure that they're accurate. It's kind of a really big chunk there. But what it's instead that you need to have their books reviewed by X date and that you have provided a review report back to me by X date that shows your work. By the way, that happened to have been one of the key ways that turned our what used to be hour and a half meeting going over what she spent 2 hours doing in a client's to a 15-minute meeting. So it shifted it from here's all the things that you need to do when you go do a review, because what we did is we moved that from her job description to putting it into a procedure. I was like, oh, I got to write a process and a procedure. And the procedure says, here's all the tasks you have to do in order to, like, so if the policy, let me just start there. So if I've got a company policy and the policy is when we review a client's books that we complete that by this time frame, having produced this report. And then there's a whole procedure that has all the tasks that say how to do that. Right. So I took that out of the job description because the procedure didn't belong in the job description. The task didn't. But what I held on to in the job description was what the results are. So you're starting to see the distinction of what I'm talking about between task and results. Is anybody not? Anybody not who's willing to say that you're not? So the idea is that you're managing from the top down versus the particles and pieces up, versus trying to manage from task. And this is an important distinction because when you give somebody the result, now they can own the result. There's lots more creativity and interesting things that can happen for somebody when you go, yeah, here's our procedure. And yeah, these are the results we want you to produce. But now all of a sudden, they get to bring their own who they are to the process, as opposed to just being an automaton doing the little tasks that you told them to do. You've just created a bigger game for people to step up to, where they can take ownership and have a greater sense of contribution, belonging, and mattering. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The second element is that it has to be a measurable standard. So when it's a measurable standard, what you're going to find is you're able to start to move away from the whole, it's ambiguous and it's unclear. So when I say, if what I had in Beth's job description before was, you know, you have to review a client's books. Well, if I just say that term, I know there's some bookkeeping people in here, you could appreciate this. If I say that term, I could say that term to 15 different people and get 15 different interpretations of what that means. Like, it just doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. And so there's a certain thing about when you can be clear about what that result looks like, that it can be very helpful to helping that person know how to win the game with you. So having a measurable standard also allows them to self-manage what they're doing. So that whole thing of when people don't follow through or not consistent in producing results, right? So a lot of you raised your hand when I talked about that earlier. If you want people to produce consistent results, let them own having a result that they're going to produce with you, when you can be really specific about what that is. And it can be measured, this is my criteria, it can be measured by anybody. So in other words, it's not subjective. So if you were to go back and look at your job description, if you have one, or look at a job description that you have for somebody on your team, ask yourself this question: could it be measured, the results that it's asking for, by anybody? Or is it going to be subjective based on whoever my boss is? And if it cannot be measured by them, then what you have not given them is the ability to have clear control over it. The other cool thing about having it be very measurable is that when it's measurable, it gives you the opportunity to be able to self-manage results from a place of being better at time management. So if I know that I make an agreement and it's got a time frame to it, I'm going to be better at managing to that result, because now it's not this open-ended agreement. We'll talk some more about that as we go along. The third element of a great position agreement is that it's agreed upon. Now, this is where, when you want people to take more ownership, let them own it. And so when I implement position agreements, one of the things that I recommend to clients is you go through and you write a position agreement. Certain elements of a position agreement, by the way, is how I look at it, is there should be 5 to 7, and I'm happy to share my outline with you too for how to do this. So if you give me a card at the end of today, I'll send you my outline for writing a great position agreement. But it's got 5 to 7 major responsibilities is one of the key things. So it says, here's the big chunks that you're responsible for. I recommend that you keep it to 5 to 7, because it makes you be more specific and it doesn't become this laundry list of things. And then for each of those major responsibilities, there's 3 to 5 measurable specific objectives and results. So when you have 3 to 5 specific measurable objective results, it makes you be more specific again, and it makes you keep it to what are the most important things that speak to the results for that person. Again, what am I doing? I'm raising it to the highest level of what's the results I want someone to produce, as opposed to what are all the tasks to get there. This last piece about getting buy-in is that I recommend that you write the position agreement and then you get your team to buy in with you. So one of the cool things about us as human beings is we love to keep our agreements. Now, some of you are like, really? Because it doesn't feel that way, right? But really, when it's truly an agreement, we love to keep our agreements. The thing is that what we have is a lot of implied expectations with people. We don't actually have agreements. What we have is things like we tell somebody to do something. And trust me, how many of you in here are managers and leaders in some way in your business or organization? Okay, cool. Thank you. What you want to remember is that people fundamentally want to be a yes to you. People want to be a yes to you. And so people are going to say yes to you even when they really shouldn't say yes to you. Now, I have kind of a strong personality, and I have to be very careful because I have this tendency, I've learned to sort of catch myself over the years. I have this tendency that I can make requests of people that sound like a request, but it's really a veiled demand. It's like, so you'll get that done by then, right? Or, can you get this done by this date? Awesome, thanks. Yeah, they say, great, yeah, no problem. But it wasn't an agreement. It was a implied either demand or expectation. And those don't work. And it's part of the reason why people don't keep agreements with us. So you're probably starting to notice that this whole thing of people not keeping agreements with us and people not doing what they say they're going to do and people not following through is really about us. That when we learn to communicate differently, when we learn to speak more clearly about what's the results, what's winning the game together, when we start operating from agreement with each other versus expectation with one another. And when I say agreement, I don't mean like, hey, is that okay with you? How do you feel about that? Would you be okay with doing that? Like, I don't mean that. What I mean is that you genuinely and in earnest engage in a conversation about getting agreement and getting buy-in. So when it comes to position agreements, my suggestion to people is, hey, you know, give it to your team and let them look at it. And if you're implementing a position agreement for the first time, oftentimes I encourage people that you up the ante. Like if you know that the way that you have the system and the structure set up in your department or your company isn't working and it needs to be better, it's a great opportunity to raise the bar. And raise the bar in a way that has people own a bigger result, not more tasks. And so oftentimes you're going to put a position agreement in place that may have a criteria that's never been part of the criteria before. But if you approach the whole thing with, hey, what we're doing is we're improving our department or we're improving our company or our division, and how can we do that together? And I would tell people, like, so here's the thing. I want to create a game with you where it's a win-win for both of us and that we're really clear about what's the criteria for success with each other. So I want you to really give this some thought. So when you implement it, let them have an opportunity to look at it, to give some thought to it, to give some input to it. And then you come back together and you get agreement about it and you work through it. And then you have them sign it. Because how many of you work in the world of contracts? Yeah. So contracts are binding. Treat it like a contract. And when you go into that contract with that person, you're making an agreement about how are we going to be together. If there are certain things that I'm going to do in order to support you, there are certain things that you're going to be accountable for in terms of the results of the job. Are you willing to do that? Give it the time that it needs. And anytime you make agreements with people, I encourage you to look at how do you be clear about what is the result that you're going after. So I'm gonna, let me just, any questions about any of this? Yes. Awesome.
As you're saying this, I'm thinking, how am I going to roll out with my long-term employees? You're going to go, oh my God, she went to another one of these workshops. So I'm trying to think
Yeah, there you go. Just blame it on me. There was this woman, Vicky Suter. So I do this all the time with teams where the teams have been in place for a long time. And, you know, part of it is just it's a communication thing, right? It's letting people know that we're going to embark on this change. Now, here's the other part. And, you know, there's in 45 minutes, I don't have time to talk about all these things, but I will tell you that the important piece of this is that once you've done this process with your team, and again, I'm happy to share the steps that I have with you. Once you've done this process with your team, though, you need to have an existence system to keep it going. Like, you can't just put it on a shelf and forget about it after you've done it. Yes, the key KPI, so it's awesome that you've got that, and that is an important element, and that you already have them identified will really help you a lot in developing the position agreements that are results-driven versus task-driven. The thing is to have an existing system in place, a structure whereby people are reporting to you based on those results. And that the reviews that you do with people are based on the position agreement and not based on some other criteria. It's always amazing to me that people have job descriptions with people, and then the reviews that they do have nothing to do with the job descriptions. I'm like, wouldn't that be what you would be reviewing them against? So tying all that in together and making sure that, you know, you look at it like so for those of you who have contracts that you deal with, when you manage contracts, you're managing to that contract, to fulfill on the contract that you have. It's no different with your employees. So whatever the structure is that you have set up, I encourage you to have a structure that allows you to make, that has an existence system to keep it going. Did that answer your question? Okay, good. Other questions about this? Yes.
So, I hate to use the word goal. You're not into assignment.
I don't think that's
goals.
Turned on.
You're not into assignment goals. You're more into crafting goals
with the employee. Or am I missing something? To gain agreement.
Yes. So it's an interesting thing when I implement position agreements with people that I make a distinction from results versus goals. So I look at results here's the distinction I make. I think of goals as being maybe short term, whereas results is long term. Now, it's not to say that position agreements can't change, because they do over time as organizations change and positions change. But when I'm talking about position agreements and the results that you're speaking to within it, it's something that is not time bound. While it's specific and measurable based on whatever that result is, that result doesn't change month in and month out, year in and year out. But if I have, but oftentimes when I have finished doing that initial implementation of a position agreement with somebody, I've gotten that buy-in and agreement, then I recommend that you do an informal review with them that gives them an opportunity to compare where they are now compared to that new position agreement. And then you set goals that are about helping them move from where they are now to where you and they have just agreed to be.
That's good. Thank you. But
okay.
You might discuss this later, but I also want to ask about follow-up. You know, at what points do you follow up on your expectations?
This is part of what I was just talking about. Thank you, about having an existence system in place whereby you have some way of regularly being in touch with those results. You know, you don't just set it and forget it. You actually have an existence system in place. So with Beth, what I had to do is I said, when you come into those meetings, we meet every Friday, you come with these reports or these KPIs, right? So you're self-managing that result. That's the cool thing, by the way. You want people to take more ownership. The more specific you can be about what the results are that they are accountable for, and you ask them to show up prepared to communicate about those results, you've just solved your problem, right? So did that answer your question? Okay, good. Any other questions? We're losing some of our students going to class. Good for you. So I just talked about this. It's collaborative. It's getting buy-in from that approach and getting agreement. So that agreement piece is super important in terms of getting people to produce a consistent result with you. Like I said before, people, we fundamentally want to keep our agreements, but making sure that they're clear and they're explicit is an important element. So let's talk about this, another reason why agreements are not kept. I'm going to go back to what I started to talk about earlier about SMART goals, that when you are having conversations with people about agreements that they're making, I recommend that you start to develop this habit of being able to ask this somewhat uncomfortable question. So, when will that get done? It's kind of like, it seems like an easy question to ask, but I notice, so I have this thing when I meet with clients or any of their teams, that I have this, and I'm going to share this with you in a minute, this meeting form that I fill out. And at the end of all of those meetings, I always ask, so this isn't a pressure question, but here's the things that you said that you were going to get done. Can you tell me when they're going to get done? So being able to start to make agreements with people that are specific, measurable, there's clear accountability. How many of you have ever been in a meeting where lots of really great ideas show up and you guys decide you're going to come up with all these initiatives, and then you leave the meeting, you're like, I have no idea how that's going to happen. Anyone ever been there? Yeah. Yeah. I've run a few of those meetings. So then you come back to the meeting next time, and depending on your personality, there's some of you who come back to the meeting next time and go, hey, what happened? How come such and so? I thought such and so was going to do this. Some of you come back to the meeting next time and go, gosh, I'm really glad nobody asked me about that. Some of you come back to the meeting next time, somebody else brings it up and you're like, what? We said what? So the way to start to, you know, and or you come away with this huge laundry list of all these things that you're going to do that aren't really practical, right? So one of the things that is a way to be able to start to create more ownership, to be able to have conversations that actually produce results with people, the way to get people to follow through more consistently is that when you're having communications with people, be clear about when an agreement is and is not being made, and start to keep this in mind. When I'm making an agreement, is it specific? Is it measurable? Is there clear accountability? Has someone actually stepped up and agreed to and said they're going to do something? Is it realistic? So this is an interesting one. And I would say that whether this is with your team, this is with your coworkers, your employees, or even your manager, that when you start to get into these conversations, oftentimes they happen in meetings, but sometimes it can just be like, you know, hey, we're all just sitting around having a brainstorming session or some conversation in the hallway, that when you make agreements, just listen for, is it realistic? Is that really a realistic agreement? And one of the things about when you put a time frame on things, it starts to get more real. So there's kind of this balance of how do I have those conversations and start to make more specific requests so that it's really clear. So is it specific? Is it measurable? What do I mean by measurable? So by measurable, I mean, could anybody know that it got done or not got done? Do I know what that criteria is? And not everything has to be that way. I mean, sometimes you're just in a collaborative, you know, brainstorming conversation with somebody. But if you want people to follow through and do what they say they're going to do, start keeping this acronym in mind. And measurable, is it measurable? Will I know when it's got done? That's actually a super useful question, by the way. How will I know it got done? When you're writing your position agreements, how will I know it got done? That's how you make it measurable. And how will anybody know it got done? That one little question will really help you. And time-driven, again, starts to close in the parameter. So this managing and keeping agreements. So I have this meeting worksheet. And again, I'm happy to share this resource with you as well. When I go into meetings, how many of you have agendas when you go into meetings? Yeah, look at all you good meeting agenda people. Awesome. So agendas are great, right? So it kind of keeps us on track. And before you leave the meeting, now maybe some of you already do this, but I find this is super helpful. During the meeting, I start keeping track of what's on the bottom of this sheet. And I go, so who's making what agreements? And then who's making that agreement? Like who's saying they're going to do something? And then at the end of the meeting, I go through with this form and I start to go through each one of the things that we said we were going to do. And then I go, so like, Joe, you said you were going to do da 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 da. Is that right? Joe squirms in his chair. No, not necessarily. And then he says, yep, that's what I said I was going to do. And then you say, so when will you have that done by? That's where the uncomfortable conversation comes. Right? Because especially if Joe's one of your coworkers, he's not your staff person, right? When we're the boss, it's easy to go, so when will you have that done? Not so easy when it's somebody who's not necessarily accountable to you. But if you can start to develop that habit, develop that practice where you start to ask that question, then what it allows somebody to do is to really start to own it. And this is where you want to listen for, is it realistic? Because people will want to be, remember what I said earlier, like right when we're a leader or a manager, people want to be a yes to us. They want to please us. So this is where it would be very helpful when you want to start to have conversations with people that will produce consistent results, that will have people follow through, is to start to ask this question of what by when. Really simple, what by when. So using this meeting form, and then what I do is at the end of the meeting, so we go through this, we go through whatever agreements were made, we codify that if it needs to change in some way, we get it specific, so like, well, what exactly will be done by that date? The whole project's not going to get done by then, right? Like, what's the one piece that will? And then we come with dates. Who's going to do it? And then at the beginning of the next meeting, this is my habit, and I do this with clients. They're not accountable. Well, they are kind of accountable to me because that's what they hire me for, is to hold them to accountability for what they say they want to do. But that's the first thing I always start with every meeting, is I pull this out and I go, so here's what you said you wanted to get done since the last time we met. How'd you do? Not a big deal, not pressure. I recommend that if you don't have that as part of your, you know, part of your process and what you're doing with your team now, it's a good exercise to start to get more accountability, get people to be in agreement, because when people agree, we naturally want to keep our agreements. That is our natural inclination. And if people consistently are not keeping their agreements with you still, then I would ask myself the question, am I making agreements or are they veiled demands or expectations? Are they truly agreements? And are they realistic? And maybe that person needs a little bit more coaching. I'll tell you a story. There was a guy who, he's the controller of a large client of mine, and he's in the city, and he gets paid really well. And so when he started his job, I was like, okay, well, for the first few months, you know, he's going to have some adjustment time. And, you know, I kind of didn't, like, we sort of have this criteria with the client about when they were going to have the books closed every month. And I kind of gave him a whole bunch of leeway for the first three, four months. I'm like, he's, you know, kind of getting his sea legs. But then about the fourth month in, he's supposed to have financials done by the 15th of the month. And 15th came and went and financials weren't done. And I'm like, Joe, what's the deal, man? Like, what's going on? Like, how come, you know, financials aren't done? And of course, he had like a whole story about it. And then I was like, okay, great. And so next month, you're going to have financials done on the 15th? Now, you know that what was Joe going to say? Because Joe was going to say, yes, of course I'm going to have them done by the 15th. And the 15th came and went the next month, and Joe's financials weren't done. And so this went on for a couple of months. And then I stopped myself up and I went, okay, wait, I'm doing that thing. I'm doing that thing that I do, which is really easy for me to do because I'm kind of bossy, as I just went, you know, what I was really doing, it was a veiled demand. There was really no conversation. There wasn't any room for Joe to have a conversation with me about the fact that he didn't really, you know, he was really overwhelmed. He needed some help. His process was glacial in terms of his approach to doing what he was doing. But I'd never stopped long enough to actually ask him those questions. And so when I finally caught myself and I was like, okay, I could keep having this conversation with Joe, but now I'm gonna catch myself. And so the next month I sat down, well, it was actually not before, we were right up at the month end. And I said, so tell me what's going on, because I notice we keep having this conversation and you keep missing your deadlines and I keep pushing you and you keep being a yes. And I know that yes is really not the right answer for you to give me unless something different happens. And so I had to be willing to hang out with him. Now, I want you to know, I was kind of cranky about it for a little while because I'm like, Joe, you get paid a lot of money to do this job. Like you said, you knew how to do all these things. I should not have to tell you how to do your job. But here was the truth about Joe. He's a great guy, but his process was never going to get those financial statements done on the 15th of the month. So one of the other things is that we need to realize that sometimes, you know, you got to ask yourself the question, you know, if somebody's not reaching their goals, what needs to happen differently in order to help them actually achieve that and be successful? And in Joe's case, what I did is I sat down and I went, so let's, you know, like we needed to invest some time and energy into looking at what was missing in his system or process in order to help him be able to get to the 15th. And part of it was explaining to him, how does he manage from result versus task, right? So, you know, you might get this really clear in your head, but with your team, and this goes to what you were talking about earlier in your question earlier, you know, how do I get my team to start doing this? It's all great that it's clear in my head that it's like, yeah, it's all about, managing for results. But part of the shift that has to happen with people too is, how do we teach people to start to think from result versus task? And that's where the, you know, if you, the in the long game here is your ability to get people to start to produce more consistent results, to take more ownership, your ability to get people to start to have conversations with people to produce results, in addition to starting to use this the SMART approach, right? Specific, measurable, accountability, realistic, and time-driven, in addition to having position agreements where it's based on results. It also is going to require some patience on your part if you want to make this shift to teaching people how to self-manage from result versus task. Because a lot of times we've just been so acculturated to my job is, you know, and this is classic. I come from a finance background. I told you I was in banking for 7 years. I was a controller for an international training company for 5 years. And so my background is finance. And I learned the hard way in the beginning of my financial career that my job was not doing bookkeeping. My job was to produce something else. That's a whole nother story I could tell you if we had more time. But I learned the hard way about what does it mean to manage for result versus task. And so a lot of times the problem is not that your team doesn't want to produce a result. Sometimes it's that they are so used to managing and living in the world of the tasks that they do that that part is missing. So the opportunity of having a well-defined position agreement that's based on results that you and they then actively engage with that process and with the results, you'll start to see that you will have an opportunity to train people to step up and to operate at a higher level. And one of the really cool things that happens from that is that you will find that people rise up to a whole nother level of contribution in your organization. And it's really fun to watch. Beth, just such a great story. When she first started working with me, she was very task oriented, and that was how I brought her into the organization, was all about task. When we worked through the whole process and started to learn to manage for results together, I had to learn to manage differently. She had to learn to self-manage differently. And I could tell you story after story of clients who have done this within their organization. I have this one client who, when I first started working with them, it was two partners. They were working 50, 60 hours a week. Their business was kind of stuck at about 800,000. They couldn't manage to get beyond that. Matter of fact, when they first started working with me, they first called me, they were wanting to know if I thought they should file bankruptcy. They had a lot of debt and they were really struggling. I encouraged them not to file bankruptcy and to, you know, come up with a plan where we could have them be financially sound. And then we spent a lot of time talking about their team and how they had their organization structured, because everything went through these two partners in what they did in their business. So all the major decisions, all of the interfacing with the client went through these two partners. And I said, what if you started to develop your team? And so we started to develop an organizational structure where everything wasn't dependent on them. We developed position agreements with their two key people that they added to their, two people who were in their team that they rose up to be, one of them an estimator, another one to be a foreman or superintendent in their case. It was a construction company. And as they did that, they developed these people who they, up until that point, had never thought they could really own a bigger result than the one they did. They thought that they were just really good technicians at what they did. But they were willing to try, and we worked on developing these position agreements and putting that into place and getting their team to step up to the next level of ownership. And they started to grow and develop. They started to develop as leaders in a way that everything didn't go through them anymore. I'm going to fast forward this story. Last year, they did over $3.5 million in revenue. They had taken, up until that point, never been taken vacation at the same time. They both were on vacation for 2 weeks at a time. They both took over 4 weeks off each last year, but they were both had taken off at the same week. Major breakdown happened on one of their projects while they were gone. The superintendent completely handled it. They didn't have to come off a vacation or be on the phone or be on triage mode. And they have a team that is amazing at really being partners with them versus helpers anymore. And one of the owners said to me at some point in a meeting, we had just finished up, and she goes, I gotta tell you, I love what I do now more than I ever have. And that's the beauty of being in the position of having a team that takes ownership with you. That's the beauty of being able to build up people to take ownership in a way that they never have before, is you develop an environment that is so much more fun for you to work in, and so much more joy and so much more time to be able to enjoy what you do and enjoy your life. So I hope that I've given you some tips today on all of this, and I know you may have some questions, which I'm happy to answer for you. And as I said, I'm happy to share the 6 tips to writing a great position agreement with you, and I'm also happy to share with you the meeting worksheet if you would like it, if you just give me your card at the end today, or you can email me. I don't know, my email address is on there. It's Vicki@Suter Business Builders. You can email me. And I'm happy to share that with you.
Let's give a big hand to Vicki. Thank you, Jennifer. So we have about 15 minutes for questions. Does anyone? advice? Do you have an advice for new supervisors, new managers? In your opinion, what are the things that should be focused on? One or two priorities? New managers, new supervisors?
Did you say two priorities?
One or two, or five.
No, I like that. Actually, one of the things that... Yeah. I actually like that you said two, because I think that... Focusing on, I always work in threes. I always say choose your top three priorities. Even from here, I would encourage you to go, like, if you just made a laundry list of things to do, choose three. Maybe even just choose one, right? So I would say study some of the great thought leaders and teachers on the subject of leadership. Make that a practice of what you do. It is still to this day a practice what I do. I'm in the middle of reading Brené Brown's book on daring leadership. I think that's what it's called, or daring leaders. It's an awesome book. Make that a habit. I think that you'll find that it will continue to help develop you as a person and as a leader. I guess that's what I would say. I mean, I would recommend that you take whatever it is that you've gotten from here today and look at, like, what's one thing that I can do now to start to make a difference, and always kind of just take that approach, you know, like, what's the one next thing that I can do? What's the one next thing? Because a lot of times we walk away from things like this, right? And we have, like, this, I know this happens for me, like, this whole list of, like, oh, like, all these really great ideas, the stuff I want to do. Choose just one thing. Just go, there's just one thing that I'm committed to doing, and then to do that one thing.
Other questions?
And yeah. Can I just add one other thing to that? And I would say this to everybody. The people who work for you and with you have a greater capacity for contribution than you are giving them credit for. I promise you. People are starved to have a greater sense of contribution and value and meaning, and I highly encourage you to empower that and define that in people. That is our job as leaders.
Ma'am.
Hi. I have a question about SMART goals, and especially the realistic part, because for me, I find that's where the subjectivity comes in, or debate on what is realistic. So how do you determine what's realistic? I think sometimes people have a tendency to want to kind of overpromise, or from both sides, either the person who's reporting to you may want to overpromise, or your supervisor may want to over demand, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. So how do you manage that expectation and come to a place where it really truly is realistic?
I think you just got to ask questions, right? I think that you just, it's like if you maybe, and one thing I would suggest, and I like doing this with people, is to create an environment where there can be dialogue about, is that realistic, and can that really happen? And one of the ways to do it is to ask yourself, is to ask the other person, so how do you see yourself getting that accomplished? Right? How do you see, like, how are you envisioning that that can happen by that time frame? Because what it does is it requires them to start with the end in mind and work their way backwards, which can be a very helpful way of being able to visualize and see what are the steps and what's the process. And it's oftentimes what will flush up if it's not realistic. That help?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So in a small company, as you grow, new positions become needed. You don't always know how to write that position statement because you really don't know what exactly they're going to be doing. I had two people, long-term employees, we were growing. I needed to move them off of their normal job. But I didn't really know all the results. How do you start to figure out exactly that position statement when it's brand new and you're developing two new, brand new positions within your same team?
I say all the more important that you have it defined when it's a new position. that you really make the effort to be super clear. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people where they've added positions or they hire somebody new and they're like, yeah, we'll figure it out as we go along. And then that person ends up being the gopher. And it's horrible, especially in a small business where you go like, yeah, like, you know, Joe's just helping, you know, Steve and Sue and Peter and Bob out. And before you know it, Joe feels like he's a ping pong and Joe has no idea how to win the game. And then one day everybody gets irritated at Joe because Joe's not living up to their expectations.
And they can help guide it because it's new. And if you have the right person that's on a leadership style, right person on the bus, if you will, they can help guide you to where they need to be if you don't know exactly.
But you have to decide from an organizational point of view what you want somebody to accomplish. You have to decide what's the result you want. Now, it's not to say that that couldn't change, because I appreciate that that could change as the organizational develops and maybe, you know, it morphs into something else. I don't recommend that you have it be the flavor of the week, but you got to put a stake in the ground for that person. Otherwise, they're not going to succeed. And I appreciate the whole training and development, but what are they training them to, right? What's the result they're training them to be able to produce independently on their own? That they're not just a helper. See, that's the problem, is that we end up hiring people to be helpers as opposed to hiring people to empower them to take ownership. And that's what creates a really small game. And if you want to create a bigger game, give people a result for people to own.
So we hear a lot about changes in the workplace with intergenerational and putting those kinds of teams together where there's more diversity, there's different generation, different expectations. And how do you sort of build that consensus on a position agreement? Because it has to not only be in an individual, it has to work within a team framework also.
So, Cynthia, is your question, how do you get consensus among a team about a position agreement?
Well, yeah, how do you make sure that all the position agreements are going to come together in integrated fashion? Because you can't just do it one-on-one. It's got to be somehow that the team is going to be doing this too. And you may have, you know, a millennial has very different expectations than a senior person versus somebody from another diversity, cultural situations. There's just a lot more mixing now, and I'm wondering, how does that come out?
Yeah, so as I listen to you, the thing that I think about is that a result is a result is a result is a result. It's measurable, it's specific, and anybody could measure it. It's not an approach.
Okay.
Right? So and what I love about when you have a position agreement that's specific and it's measurable and it's based on a result, and it's then all of those individuals with their unique personalities and unique perspectives, unique approaches, that they can bring that to the party. And it's not about having to, it's not, the position agreement isn't about tailoring to the style. It's about when we're clear about what the result is that we're going after, we can all bring whatever style we bring to it as long as we can agree on these results. And that's really what I love about it, is that it allows for us to have different people who have different ways of coming at a solution or a result.
Good. A lady over there.
Hi, Vicki. Thanks
Hi.
For being here today.
You're
I enjoyed
welcome.
Your talk. You mentioned that you ventured off and decided to start your own business when you were having a hard time in your corporate world. What was that like getting started? How did you build exposure for your services? How did you build clients? Can you touch on that a little bit?
Sure. I happen to have been fortunate enough, the first client that I took on was somebody who was in the construction industry who wanted to automate their systems, and I happened to have helped them implement an automated software that I ended up getting connected to, that I ended up building my business through training on that software and then offering more services. So that's how I actually developed and built that business. Word of mouth, networking, connecting with people, just putting myself out there in a way that I never had, because I came from a finance background. Marketing was a whole new world to me. And so learning to exercise that muscle and learning that it was about developing relationships and building know, like, and trust factor, which is you got to show up and you got to be present and you got to be out there. So I spent a lot of time investing in that.
Thank
well.
You.
You're welcome.
Richard.
My question has to do with the elephant in the room, time management. I find that people will often find they don't have enough time to do something they didn't want to do to start with. How do you work around that thing?
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I'm actually really glad you brought that up, because I was thinking about this in terms of the whole, I meant to mention this, in terms of the whole of managing a specific what and by when. When you put a by when on things, what it starts to do is it starts to give people the ability to be able to manage to a specific deadline, which is different than open-ended agreements. We're horrible at keeping open-ended agreements, right? And we're horrible with keeping open-ended agreements with ourselves. We're much better at keeping agreements that we make with other people. So I think that the whole time, two things I would say. One is the whole time thing, making sure that there's a specific what and a by when. Those two things. And the second thing is to kind of catch yourself where that's where the realistic part comes in, right? So if you catch yourself making, I want to say jerky promises, because that's what I think. It's like, you know, am I making jerky promises? Like, am I making unrealistic promises just so that I can be a yes to somebody? Is somebody making jerky promises with me because they want to be a yes to me? So that's when it, like, it's our job as managers and leaders to stop and go, okay, let's just talk about this, because you keep making these agreements and you keep not keeping your agreements. So it's also being willing to have those hard conversations, right? I mean, that's really, because that's kind of what we've been talking a lot about today, right? Is that whole thing of, like, are we willing to have the hard conversations with people? And that's our job as managers and leaders. That's our job as good teammates, is to be willing to have those hard conversations. And I'm going to say, for all of you who are students in the room, I know a number of students have already left for classes, but, you know, I cannot encourage you enough to be willing to learn how to exercise that muscle, to be able to have graceful, honest, open, direct, hard conversations with people, because that's where the power of great relationships get built.
So, Vicki, one of the things I kept thinking about as I listened to you is that we hear these really sad statistics about how bad employee engagement is. Something like 70% of our employees are not engaged. And I'm wondering, in your research and using these position agreements, are we seeing an increase in employee engagement, an increase in the ability to retain employees, increased productivity? Is there a correlation, if you move to this best practice of a position agreement, to see improvements in those areas for your clients?
Unequivocally, yes. Yeah, I can tell you anecdotally from all the people that I've worked with in this body of work that I've been doing for 25 years, and I know there's other people like Dan Pink, who has done research on this topic, Brené Brown, who has done research on this topic. They're both amazing thought leaders on this topic of people and leadership and teams, who are researchers at heart. And yeah, there's a lot of evidence to say that that's absolutely true.
So it's a huge payoff in addition to achieving results.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Other questions? The lady there, sorry, you've already had one, I think. Yes, you.
So I really appreciate you sharing a little bit about some of your tips for us as students. Something that really resonated with me just now that you had said, it's our job as leaders and managers to have these hard conversations. And as a student, I was wondering, what are your tips for us when we go to someone who's in a higher position, who maybe our manager and isn't willing to have that hard conversation? So what can we do as students or as like an employee to have that hard conversation with them?
That's a good question. So one of the things that I, as I was listening to you, the thing that came to mind for me is the word responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I operate from my life in a place that I am 100% responsible 100% of the time for the results in the relationships and how they exist in my life. And when I say the word responsibility, I define it as the ability to respond. So am I communicating from a place of, sometimes we want to have conversations with other people in a way that we want them to change without having to be vulnerable to owning our own, to be willing to be vulnerable to our own request and to what's really going on for us. So one of the places that I would stand is from, first of all, taking 100% responsibility for that relationship, and then secondly, asking myself the question, is there a way for me to have a communication with that person such that I have communicated fully what's my experience in working with them and where my own struggle is in getting something done? It's the only way I know to make my way through any relationship with somebody is to be willing to be honest about what's my experience over here for me, not in a way that I'm trying to manipulate their behavior, but in a way that I'm in earnest attempting to have things work out. Does that make sense?
So I want to remind you, and Corey's holding up, we have a book authored by our wonderful speaker today, The Prophet Bleed, which is going to be sold out here by the door. And also, please give Vicki Suter your card if you want to get her to send you any of the other backup materials she referenced in her talk. Let's give her a fantastic applause for a well done talk. We really appreciate it. Great job. And now I bring back my wonderful partner, Dr. Denise Lucy.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for always doing such a terrific job of listening. You're such an amazing listener, Cynthia. I'm serious. I really appreciate your questions. And yes, our students did have to leave, Vicki. I'm sorry. They had to go to class. I hope you know some of them had excellent questions, as the last two people demonstrated. So thank you all for being here. I thought perhaps before we leave, I could just offer the fact that we do have other programs at the Institute for Leadership Studies, one of which is our leadership lecture series in partnership with Book Passage. Once again, Bank of Marin is a terrific supporter of this program. Thank you so much, Lee Delpan, for being our key representative and for Bank of Marin's support just for this program as well as our lecture series. We have a program this week. Valerie Jarrett is coming, and I really urge you to get on the phone right now or get online to Book Passage, our partner who will sell you tickets. We do have a sellout with Melinda Gates. Sorry to say to you that we have it sold out, but all the others are available. Abby Wambach, David Brooks, please get your tickets as soon as possible. We really hope that you'll join us. We also have an invitation to you to join our Toastmasters International, which we hold every Wednesday evening. Our students and community members learning to be better speakers through Toastmasters. We hope you can join. All you have to do is attend, and it's in the Magnolia, Itchell Mansion, first floor. Also, we have executive education programs in leadership, teams, and business innovation. So please be in touch with any of us to give you more information about that. You can also go to our website. The most important part of leadership, in my view, is to thank genuinely to those who support you and who partner with you. And I just want to make sure we mention the master of organization and partnership, Corey Colburn. I want to please give her our thanks, because she and her team, Jennifer Bellingham, Manny Machado, Jacqueline Jacinto, and Carissa Lee, are here today to make sure you are all comfortable. And thank you so very much for making all these details happen. So once again, and so with our partners, SBDC, San Rafael Chamber, Marin CEO Club, please make sure that you come and visit our colleagues. We're going to break and have a few moments to network. Thank you for coming. And oh, one last thing. This is recorded on Penguin Radio. Professor Stu Horn, thank you, Stu, for being here, has recorded this program, and you can listen to it on penguinradio.com. Thank you. Have a good day.